Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow, joins us now because it is, in fact, Hutton O'Clock. Hutton, always appreciate our weekly chats with you. I was just telling Willie and D. Mace, I feel so dejected about this Ravens game after the Colts game. They were just out-physicaled. They couldn't run the football. They couldn't stop the run. And then going into a game against Baltimore with one of the best defenses and one of the best run games in the NFL, I need a reason to feel some optimism for this Ravens game.
Yeah, that's kind of like we discuss every other week, right? I mean, it's that type of season for the Tennessee Titans, just when you think they have a chance to get some momentum going, consistency, stack some wins. And by the way, this is the month of October is generally where the teams begin to turn and show who they are. The Titans have happened what they have happened up in Indy. It's a big game for the AFC. I mean, this feels like if it's not one of those pivotal games for the Titans just to turn a corner, It's a wild card positioning type matchup for both organizations and divisions that right now are pretty close to one another in record. Interesting to say the least, given the fact that Baltimore feels like they've handed some games away. Titans feel like they probably feel the same way, given the fact, Caroline, that I think they know what they want to do or what their identity is. They're just not consistently showing us that they can do that week in and week out.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow is with us. We heard from Mike Vrabel earlier. He said Jeffrey Simmons and Tyer Tart would not practice today. Now, it's Wednesday. They still could come back out tomorrow and still could be a full go against the Ravens on Sunday. But what would that mean for this defensive line? Let's say it's out Simmons and Tart against Lamar Jackson in that Baltimore run game.
Well, it's a different it's definitely a different feel without Simmons, okay? I heard a lot about Tyer Tart not being in the game last week, and I think that paired with Simmons getting the stinger certainly played an effect. But, man, it was more than just the interior of the defensive line. It's that collective group. In the games where we have made the comparisons of the defensive front to where they were really good 2 years ago, they have won those games. You know, they've been the disruption up front that has helped the secondary. And when they're not a factor, the Titans aren't winning games, period. They're not getting off the field. 83% of the time on third down on their wins, Caroline, the Titans are getting off the field on third down defensively. And when they lose games, it's 50% of the time defensively on third down. And in large part, it's what goes on in the line of scrimmage, the physicality, the trenches. Titans didn't win that up front. The Colts pushed them around. The Ravens are certainly capable of doing the same thing. I think it's a different type of rush, though, with Lamar Jackson, not allowing him to hit the edge and do some things with the legs outside of the pocket instead of collapsing the pocket the way we saw with Joe Burrow, for instance. So it's a different game plan, but the game plan always includes Jeffrey Simmons. They've got to have him.
Now, Hutt, Vrabel did mention – at the beginning of the week after the presser after the game Monday, that there was thoughts of benching Fulton. Do you think that if they have a repeat or some missed assignments by Fulton, do you think they are even capable of benching him?
Oh, you're saying the depth-wise?
Yes, depth-wise.
Yeah, I mean, it's not I guess the alternative would be, okay, we're taking him out because the eyes continue to be in the backfield. He's getting run over on some of these routes. It was reminiscent of A.J. Brown in Philadelphia and from last year and what we saw from Pittman last week. The quick answer to that is no, the depth is not up to par. It's not up to snuff. And I think the other quick answer, D. Mace, is, man, the D-line and the pass rush has to affect the quarterback enough to help out the secondary. It's not a good situation. The alternative, though, would be, okay, we're getting Fulton out of there because he's a focus of what they're doing. They're going at him, and can it be much worse? Because they're giving up a ton of yards, not points, mm-hmm. but in in that respect, they couldn't get off the field to get their offense the ball back and even have a chance to, you know, stay on the field. So it's a situation you don't want to be in this early in the season, especially with Fulton in a contract year. I thought this would progress better than what it had, given what we had seen from him this offseason and going into a season where he seemed motivated and ready to prove himself. It's more of the same, and that's the frustrating part. And even more frustrating has to be the fact that, well, while we consider internally the sentiment might be, well, while we consider sitting him down, well, we don't have anyone that's really going to take his spot long term.
In regards to the O-line, now we've discussed, you know, now that Nicholas is back, that there's a potential of Nicholas being inserted somewhere on that offensive line. Judging by what Vrabel said, Hubbard's doing his job on the right side. I don't expect them to do anything this week, considering, you know, it's you know, they're traveling overseas, and yep. it may not be the best thing right now. But do you think after the break, depending on how Dillard plays against the Ravens, that we could see Nicholas at left tackle?
I think it's a possibility, yes. I think he's next man up at either of those spots. I agree. I don't think they want to flip the apple cart on a short week or a shortened week due to travel at the right tackle position. He has played left tackle at Ohio State. And, you know, I once again, the offensive line coming off of how bad things looked in Indy didn't seem to be the main issue. And they can always improve. I think they do want to find a way to get NPF on the field, but they're not just going to insert him back to the lineup at right tackle just for the sake of, well, that was his spot. I think Hubbard's been fine. Now they need to see where they can address the O-line the best, given the fact that they've had some struggles at left tackle with Dillard, but they also don't want to just throw him right back in without getting some practices underneath him, meaning MPF at left tackle, if they're going to work him there more so than not. So I think right now, if one guy were to go down, it's NPF that's next man up at either spot. And I think it's a big evaluation game for Dillard. Yes, I do. And a big game for a lot of those Titans up front.
Jonathan Hutton's with us. All right, Hutt, I'm going to give you an Albert Breer line that caught my attention, has had me thinking all week long. With the collapse of the Patriots, I asked this to Tim Hasselbeck yesterday. He said Albert Breer's assessment, being sort of a New England-based guy who's a league writer, but he said the Bill Belichick formula was to have what he called a middle-class roster with the greatest quarterback of all time, right? And so the greatest quarterback of all time elevates the middle-class roster into a championship team. He said now that you don't have that, it's becoming evident that the middle-class roster that Bill Belichick is still building every year is not good enough. I think about that a little bit with the Titans. Middle-class roster with, instead of Derrick Henry elevating all boats and turning you into a winning team, I see a middle-class roster. So is that wrong? I'm concerned about that. I see a middle-class roster that has to be perfect on the margins to get where they want to go.
Totally. I don't think that's wrong. I see, you know, just using the terminology, the middle-class roster that it sometimes plays even below that, given some of the drops we've seen.
And I think that's going to happen to a lot of – there's a lot of middle-class rosters, right, in the league. That's why there's so much parity.
But the thing, too, you had – in this case, your version of Brady's in the backfield with Derrick Henry, right? And
absolutely. And I don't think he's quite the same – as he was, and this is not a look. They're still, on a given year, are three or four or five loaded rosters, like the Eagles, the 49ers, and, you know, I guess any team that Patrick Mahomes is on, even though they're not as loaded as maybe they were a couple years ago. But you see where I'm going, right? They don't have that guy that is erasing all the mistakes and elevating the weaknesses, masking the weaknesses.
Well, you also had, you know, the other players around the Patriots that, you know, were middle class, and that was on their worst day. And then they had, like, you know, the Edelmans and others that would step up, and you were just gamers with the biggest plays and the biggest moments.
Sure.
They were going to drop the pass.
McCourty. I mean, guys that he relied on that were there year in, year out, that
no
were not superstars, but just good, solid role players, Brewski, Vrabel, you know, guys,
and
guys like
the
that.
Defense, the defense on the other side was always consistent.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't one game on, one game off. It wasn't the Patriots could put up 40 points in a game and do that throwing the football. They could then the very next week flip the script and do that running the football. They could run it 40 times and put up that many points, depending on what they needed to do week to week. This Titans offense cannot do that, even with the same type of build. And again, a lot of that is just there's two or three elite quarterbacks in any given season, and the Patriots had that. That's for sure. And the other thing, like they even won games whenever Brady was out. And I think that's also part of the culture and the mentality of what you're building, knowing what you're doing and who you are. And I think in large part, the Titans roster, and just trying to compare the two analogy, the Titans roster is still trying to figure out the footing of we know the Titans way, quote unquote. Can they actually win in the trenches week in and week out? Even if you're playing the elite offensive lines, this Titans defensive front was known for going up against that group and holding its own. And then vice versa, the O-line against the best defensive fronts, they're still going to run the football. And if you're not going to run the football, you're going to stay on the field at a lot higher rate, much higher rate. And maybe the most important point, if pass rosters and teams are going to reach the red zone, the Titans are coming away with points in the end zone, not through the uprights. And that's what they're not doing. They're not scoring the football.
They have to be good in the red zone. There's no question about it. They've got to finish these long drives with touchdowns. All right, so we have our other huge debate, Hutt, this week is Derek and I are looking at the numbers. We're putting it with our eye test. And our assessment is, I'm pulling Derek in as a united front. He may disagree with me on some of this stuff, but I just think it's time for Tajay Spears to have a higher percentage of the carries, not more than Derek Henry, but a higher percentage of the carries that they are using right now, because his numbers are clearly better. And Derek Henry is certainly capable still, as we saw against Cincinnati, of having a great game, but Where do you sit on that? Because this offense needs some explosiveness, and Spears has got some of that.
I want to see a higher percentage of touches. It doesn't necessarily have to be carries for him. They do lack explosiveness. Look, they have 17 red zone drives. That's tied for 11th, and 6 red zone touchdowns. And they on first down, Willie, 887 yards on first down. That's 5th in the NFL, but they're dead last on downs, second, third, and fourth down. Dead last with just under 600 yards of total offense. They have to get the ball into the hands of the skill players that at least pose the threat of the speed, the agility, the quick twitch. I would put all of that in the backfield with what they've added this offseason through the draft. So, with that in mind, yeah, I'm totally fine with it, especially on a week where Burks isn't in the game, and Chigakonkwo, at least in remaining to this point, has 22 targets. I mean, it's just on the season, it's just a non-factor right now. And he drops another pass this past Sunday. I would just put it in the hands of the identity of the team, and that's got to be Henry. But I'm with you out of the backfield. If you're going to improve the pass game by adding a running back, I would up the percentage of touches while still trying to force the issue with Henry, because again, I think that's the best way and the best path to victory for this offense currently off of play action.
And look, this is where Jonathan Hutton is with us. This is where kind of our conversation started, was I feel like there's a common misconception where it's either Spears or Henry and you have to be on one team or another. Because I look at
and
it,
that's not the argument. That's not the argument at all.
Right.
It's how do you divvy up the pie.
I look at it like the Titans have won 2 games this season, and those 2 games, Derrick Henry has gotten the ball 22 times, and the other one, he got it 25 times. So I look at it and say, okay, well, whatever you're doing with Derrick Henry is working. And I understand that not every single game you're able to give Derrick Henry the ball 30 times. Like against the Browns, when you're down 2 touchdowns, running the football isn't necessarily the best path to victory. But I look at it like, look, feed the ball to Derrick Henry. Let him be your primary running back, and let Tajay Spears be a really good supplementary piece to that.
Well, the supplementary piece that I think can grow as the off, as the season progresses, like this offense has to expand in some areas that it does well. They do really, really well in play action. They do, but they have to be in certain downs and get in certain positions where they're able to use that. Tannehill is second in play action yards. He's fifth in play action pass attempts. Tannehill, and I'm flipping it to Tannehill because I think the run game affects the pass game in a large way for this offense. And the pass game can be affected by getting more of Spears involved and Henry. But if Tajay Spears deserves to get more of the percentage of touches just based on what we've seen, and especially just given the fact that you're trying to move the football a bit better than just going to Hopkins every single time between the 20s. We did see the red zone 19-yard score for Spears this past week. So I'm all for seeing the football in his hands. I don't want to do it just to take the football out of Henry's hands. But I think that's more game plan mentality is what we're discussing here. And the game plan should be, where are the threats offensively? There are possession guys. There's Hopkins. There's Henry. And Spears has to be a threat. He's got to be one of their outlets that can move the sticks in a down and distance where you're not really expecting it, where the punter's getting warmed up. That has to be more of a focus moving forward, especially given the fact that they're sitting where they are at a very back-and-forth rate playing ping-pong on the win-loss record.
Titans sitting at 2-3 on the season, and Hutton, four of those games, I cannot say that Ryan Tannehill has been the problem. But for some reason, I still hear so many Titans fans, you know, complaining about Tannehill and saying that Tannehill is the problem. Where are you at with Ryan Tannehill right now and his contributions to this team?
I'm fine with Ryan Tannehill right now. The offense was okay. The offense was okay this past week. Good. Not, they weren't great, but I like the way they moved the football. The defense just could not get off the field. And when they got in the red zone, they've got to get touchdowns, period. Nick Folk, the old refrain of Nick Folk's kick is up and good is good, but it's not good enough. And that's where it's really frustrating. It's where things bog down a bit. He's either had and he's still getting he didn't get knocked around all that much this past week. I believe 9 hits, which compared to what we've seen in the first 4 games is an improvement. It's a mark of improvement. It's a check mark. But I don't point to Tannehill. He doesn't come to mind as the top several reasons why this team is where it is. You can go back to week 1 and say yes, but since then, no issues. And while there are plenty of issues as for consistency, Tannehill to me is further down that list than probably where a lot of fans have him, just because it's the position everyone watches, right? And what we forget to look at are the drop passes, the unforced errors that come with penalties or callbacks that would have resulted in first down yardage based on a catch and throw that Tannehill has made. I'm totally fine seeing what we've seen. And by the way, like that's them doing the offense that they've been doing in past years. It's just this year, going back to Willie's point about Breer making that comparison with the Patriots, I don't think they don't know when they get off the bus week to week if it's going to be consistent or not. And in the past, they felt pretty good about the fact that they were getting off the bus with the offensive line and the run game ready to show up. And then after that, it was up to Tannehill and the receivers to play off of that. Right now, they don't have a way to jumpstart it. And unless they have the engine running to start the game, it doesn't seem like it really gets going.
Last one from me, Hutton. What'd you make of Christian Fulton essentially calling out the refs, blaming the refs for his 2 PI calls on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Be better. This is a league that is set up for the defense to fail. I mean, it's the rules are lopsided in the favor of the offense anyway. The plays I saw, you've got to get turned around. You've got to make a play on the ball, or just not get steamrolled while you get locked up on a route and your eyes are peeking in the backfield. It's got to be better than that, guys. And let's say it, if Vrabel is considering something with Fulton and maybe looking at a depth chart that isn't good enough to insert over him, that's not because the officials have it out for Christian Fulton. Christian Fulton's trying to come up with an excuse. And I it's human nature to do something like that, but it feels a bit like, and Adoree never blamed the refs, but Adoree had the yips when it came to punt return. And I think there is something to be said about the mental aspect of the game on the outside at that corner spot on an island. And Fulton may have a bit of those right now, just because we're seeing it game in and game out, where it's not nearly as good as it should be given the investment made.
Yeah, how about you just do your job, and then maybe we don't have to bring up the referees.
It's a tough job.
Hey, yeah, it is.
I'm not making excuses for the guy, because there are plenty of players across the league that aren't doing blaming the refs. But the quarterback position is extremely difficult to begin with, and they made it even more strenuous given the rules. And yeah, Fulton's got to play within that, and the Titans chose to have him be that guy, so he's got to play through it. Vrabel doesn't comment much on the officials. Fulton should be doing it either.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
Always enjoy this, guys. You guys have a great rest of the week.
Awesome. Thanks, Hutton. You too. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Now, coming up next, we opened up a can of worms with the show that comes after us yesterday. So we'll respond. Coming up next, Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.